Moving on to our next frame then, perception is projection. Now, actually, let's just hook back briefly to the cause thing for a second. Now, what we're really saying here is that the person is causing everything that's happening. You and I cause everything that happens to us at some level. Now, I have to tell you that these frames, they are not true. They are not true, okay? And you need to realize that you need to act as if they're true. You can't prove that they're true. You can't disprove that they're true either, but act as if they're true, okay? And that's important. And you will hear when someone's at cause, not at cause, because they'll use the word because, or they'll use the word if then. And when you hear those, you know the person's running, that they're at effect rather than at cause. Good, moving on. So perception is projection. It seems to be a law of life that, and this actually comes from Carl Jung directly. This perception is projection, and he said, Carl Jung said that whatever we perceive inside is actually a projection from the outside, vice versa. So, and we perceive through our filters. So we perceive things through our filters because you cannot experience the world outside of you. You can only experience inside. And what you, the only thing you can actually experience is your internal representation. That's it. That's all you can experience. And of course your state as well, which goes with that. But all you can, the only thing you're ever experiencing is your internal representation. Now, that means that right now you're having an internal representation right now, but it looks like you're having an external one. It looks like I'm here, but I'm not. I'm actually somewhere, I'm actually on your visual cortex somewhere in your eye somewhere, and you perceive that. Now, I've done some, had a chat actually with a few people about this, some opticians and stuff. There are some tests you can do, and in fact, you can do that. You can actually, we can do it simply. How many people have done it before, where you stare at a light, and then you look away from the light, but the light's still there? How many people have done that? That's because that's been in that impression is still on the visual cortex at this point. That's the same concept, as in whatever you're seeing outside yourself's not actually there. It just appears like it's there. Just like your problems appear to be there, but they're not really there. It's just in your perception. You create them. So perception and projection and cause and effect work together in that you perceive things and therefore you create them. What you have to get the idea is that you are the observer. It's called the observer effect. And I'll look a bit more at that when we look at quantum linguistics and quantum physics. We'll have a brief look at that in a few moments. So really, the thing is that it's never the outside that's a problem because you can't change the outside. You can't change other people. You can't see people want to change their husband or their wife or whatever. They want them to change to make the problem go away. Let's stop them doing X, stop them doing Y. You can't change that. And when the person comes in, they will want you to. They will want you to change this other person. Somehow in their mind, they think you can do that, even though the other person's not even there. But again, when you come, you'll get that specifically when you do couples work. So if you do any family therapy work with whole families like Virginia Satir, or if you do couple counselling, for example, working with couples that are having marital challenges or whatever, then when they come in, basically they're both making the other person wrong. And they want you to make the other person be aware that it's them that's doing it. And what you've got to do, of course, is make them both aware that it's both them for their stuff. And all they're really doing is both living at effect, so therefore never really truly knowing who each other is in the relationship. So it's important that you realize that perception is projection. And when you change your... what we actually... in fact, this is what we're doing. At this seminar, what we're doing is we're changing your projections. We're changing what you're projecting because we're going to change what you're perceiving in the inside. And I want us to live for these 11 days... we're going to totally believe, one, that you're the cause for everything that happens in your little universe or your big universe, Or, and in addition to that, we're also going to also live that we are, it's whatever we see outside ourselves is a projection from inside of us as well. Which is kind of cool, actually, because it means that you projected me. Well done, you created me. Aren't you cool? Now, of course, you create other people too. And sometimes you go like, hey, so some projections you see, you go like, yeah, I did that. And other ones you go like, that wasn't me. You have to believe it all the time, okay? And when you do that, again, it empowers you because it means that it's you. And we'll talk a bit more about this when we get to values as well, but the truth is there's only you. There is only you, not everybody else. There's a question, so I wish a microphone runner to be ready, please. Simon first, please, on the outside.
My question is, this phrase, whatever we see outside is a projection from inside.
Mm.
If you say that to a lay person in the street, or actually any of us in normal conversation, they're going to think, no, that's rubbish.
Yes.
So can you kind of expand on that and explain it a bit more? Because I'm still in that zone of, hang on a minute, you know, that board right there is not a projection from me, it's a board right there.
Yeah, okay, good. Excellent, thank you. So the question is, how can we easily explain it so that someone can grasp the concept? Well, let me first say that when I'm working with a client, I don't go as far as that. I only go as far as having them have the experience of realizing that the judgments they make about other people are the judgments that are actually about themselves. That's only as far as I go. I don't go as far as explaining that everything outside of them is actually a projection from inside them. I don't go that far with therapeutic work. But I am going this far here because I want to have you understand it. And Tam's in the centre, please. Extra microphone, please, Sean.
So something that arises in my mind is why bother to do NLP? Because in some respects, everyone's doing what they're doing, and why should I be interfering? I was listening to the tapes, and they're kind of counselling people or putting them in a position that they can fulfil themselves. And
yes.
I think, well, is that my business to be there? And how do I know what's right for them anyway? I can see the idea of facilitating them to lead happier lives, I guess. And I can see the benefits for me personally in clearing up some of my own miscommunications in the world. But it's kind of, it seems to be a little bit in conflict at the moment for me.
So what's all that about? Because I hear what you say.
Yeah.
And what is it that prevents you from deciding to do this work and make it easy while you do it? And enjoy it in the process?
Nothing I can think.
What's the belief?
Well, that I
don't. Why stand up and share and say anyway?
Okay, that I don't know what's best for someone else.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. That is correct.
Yeah, sure.
And you never will.
Absolutely.
So, how is it a problem?
I could be wasting my time. I don't think I am.
Mm-hmm. So, do you have a belief? Because what I'm hearing from you at the moment, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing from that belief is you don't know what's best for them. That true? That's what you just said. What if I don't know what's best for them?
Yeah, sure.
That's what you said, yes?
Yeah, sure.
So is that the problem? What if I do this work and I don't know what's best for them?
I don't think that's a problem.
So what was the problem?
It's more of a feeling than a problem.
Okay. So how is the feeling a problem? What's the feeling?
It's just like a feeling of, is this stuff the right stuff to do, you know? Is it? It's just like a question, actually, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like saying, is it a good thing to do? And it's, I can feel it collapsing anyway, that's a total uncertainty here.
Yes. That's fine. And I'll do the same thing. So when I come to any kind of seminar, the first thing I always want to do on a seminar, I'm the most difficult, obstinate student that could ever be in the audience, because I always want to mismatch everything. I want it to be proved to me before I'll believe it.
Yeah, sure, I'm the same.
And a number of people like that in the audience, and that's great. I welcome you, because you know, it's good to mismatch and do those things ahead of time. I think what you're searching for, though, is that you have a belief that if the person can do all this themselves, then why should I be? What am I going to do?
Yeah, I think I've hit on. Yeah,
because that's where you started. How are you feeling now?
Well, I was just, my mind was searching for stuff, and I think maybe I've had sort of bad experiences of being in people's business, and I have a better experience of actually being out of people's business, in my own business, and I'm slightly concerned that I'm taking up time. The
that's okay, but it's valuable, because I think it is valuable. But let me answer the question quickly. I think you have the belief that says that, you know, who am I? Who am I to go and help these people? Well, let me tell you this.
Yeah, sure.
You're not there to solve their problem for them. And I think in the past, when you said, I've been in other people's business, and you have a bad association to that, it's probably because you've been giving the people the answers.
Yeah, I did.
Well, that's not what you do in an NLP, because it's not your answers that count. What you do is you help other people to find the answers within themselves. And the skill of an NLP practitioner is helping the other person to realize that all the answers are inside themselves. Now, the reason why we are needed is because there's so much programming to the opposite. There is so much programming to the opposite that everybody, for example, believe that they are not the solution to their problems, and the problems are something caused outside of them, that people like us are needed. And the more you stay in that place where you are assisting other person to solve their own problems, the more successful you'll be.
Okay.
And since you've had experience in the past, of being in other people's business, you'll now realize as a result of that when you are, and realize what you need to do to get back on track and have them solve the problem for themselves, versus other people here who've maybe not had the experience of being in other people's business before, in which case they might have to experience it again and you won't. The fact that you've had that is really useful for you now, because it means that you'll always be able to stay having them solve the problem rather than being in it yourself. And maybe that's the reason why you had all that learning. Maybe that was because you were meant to be a helping professional. Maybe it's because you had that skill and ability, you had that desire to want to help people, but now you found a better way of doing it rather than having to carry those burdens of the thing. That's the great thing. You don't have to carry their problem on your shoulders anymore and solve it for them, because it's never your problem.
Yeah. Actually, it does seem to me that actually just living out of an example is the best way anyway. So it doesn't, and they can pick it up or not as they please.
Well, that's certainly true.
So
living out the example is certainly true.
Yeah.
But when you sit down with that person, you know, because at the end of the day, I'm assuming that at some point someone's going to want to come and see you. Is that correct? And for the help, are you thinking about having?
Well, I've got a couple of people I'm coaching at the moment.
Great.
Interestingly enough, yeah.
Perfect.
Well, and they tried to put me at their cause, actually, and I wouldn't have any of it. I just refused.
How did you do that?
Well, I could see it happening, so I just, are you sure? I just questioned it. Are you sure that I'm kind of responsible for you? I'm doing an eating thing with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, I laugh when they sort of look at me and they say, oh, going to eat cheese again. I kind of, like, I just know it's not me. It's just them that's doing it. So.
Yes. So you're going to learn more tools for that. I mean, you have tools already. So next time the response would be to someone like that was, how does what I'm doing cause you to choose to want to eat more cheese?
Sure.
Yeah. Rather than, because there's a little bit of a danger, and I can see it just slightly, there's a little bit of danger in what you said, that you've been a little bit hooked by what they said, a little bit hurt by what they said. And when your self-worth pot, think of everybody as having like a self-worth pot, okay? Now what happens is, when somebody says something to you and your little self-pot gets a little bit tagged, for example, what you do is you stand up and you defend. And what you do is you run one of the satire categories at this point. You either blame, you placate, Mm-hmm. You'd be going, well, that's not very real. That's a bit, you know, how am I doing that, for example? Or you go, it's not me. Mm-hmm. And you'll do one of those four patterns. I think you do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I think
you're
like, it's not me. Yeah, I think you're more like that. But you also have a tendency to want to do this as well and also a bit of that as well at the same time. So that's the pattern.
You've got to do one of the four.
Yes.
You might as well do a mix.
Yeah, but I think you go here first. I think you go here first.
Probably, maybe.
More asymmetrical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we're doing some exercises on that. Mm-hmm. When we do the meta model, that will have you understand that for you. And everybody's going to have an experience of doing those particular patterns. You're all going to get an opportunity to be doing blamer. You're all going to do placator. You're all going to do computer with each other intensely to see what shows up. Mm-hmm. It's pretty intense. That's one of my new exercises I put in. Thank you for sharing.
Thank
very
you.
Nice.
Thank you.
Okay. So, and from a perceptionist projection point of view, we know there's 2 million bits coming in, but you can only pay attention to 7 ± 2 bits at any one time. So what do you do with the rest? If you've got 2 million bits coming in, and therefore, you know, because your experience isn't, as you look out in the world, your experience isn't that you can only pay attention to 7 or 2 things. There's more things you're paying attention to, but unconsciously. So what you do with the rest is you make it up. You actually make the rest of it up. And the stuff that you make up is often where the problem is. Okay, let's have a look at our internal representations. What we're looking at here is, and this is important, and that's that your internal representations, your external event comes in, you filter it, deleting, distorting, and generalizing through your filters, creating your internal representation. Now, your internal representation is either you seeing a picture, or it's you remembering a sound or repeating a sound or someone's voice over in your head. And that then creates the emotional state here. But we can also, inside our head, talk to ourselves. And you can also talk out loud as well, using your language. Now, here's what's important. Your language is one step away, it's actually 2 steps away from real experience. As in, the first experience is out here, then you have an internal representation of it, and then you start talking about your internal representation. Now, when you talk about your internal representation, are you going to talk about every single thing in your internal representation, or is your language going to have big deletions, distortions, and generalizations in it? What do you think? It's going to have big deletions, distortions, and generalizations in it, isn't it? So what we're going to do is we're beginning to work here at this level, beginning to work with the language here so that we change the internal representation, so that we change what the person's perceiving about the problem, and then the problem will go away. That's what we're actually doing here. Because, remember, one of the presuppositions of NLP is the map is not the territory. So what we're saying here is the map, that's the internal representation, is not the territory. But this is the map of the map. And most people work with language. That's what we work with. We work with language. When we're speaking to people, I'm talking now with language. So therefore, we're always working with a map of the map. So therefore, what we need to do is, if we can begin to work here, because this changes the way a person experiences the world. If we turn the page now to the presuppositions of NLP, let's have a quick look at those. Well, let's have a quick look at responsibility for value, responsibility for results. Who's responsible for results when you're working with somebody else? They are. Yes? It's the same thing with value, responsibility for value, responsibility for results. Same thing. Look, if you buy a blender, if you buy a car, if you go out to dinner, or when you purchase a service, who's responsible for value? Them or you? You are responsible for value. And when you take a training, you're responsible for value as well. Because you can have the best blender in the world, but if you never use it, it's not very valuable. If you have the best car in the world, but it sits in the garage, even the best car in the world, for example, Ferrari, if you leave it in the garage, what happens to the Ferrari if you leave it in the garage? You don't use it. Does the engine work very well when you finally turn it on, yes or no? No, you've got to use it. Again, when you go out for dinner, when you go out for purchase service, responsibility for value, responsibility for results lies with you. Or in your case, when you're working with a client, responsibility for the result lies with them. But it actually applies to you as well. Because you're responsible for what you do in this situation. So both people are responsible for the result. And that way, both people are empowered and both people get their needs met and you get the result. Let's have a look at neurotransmitters briefly before we move on to the quickly snap through the presuppositions. Neurotransmitters. What we're saying here is that basically the information, what's actually happening inside the person's nervous system is their problem is basically passing down their neurons. And all of these neurons are basically passes in like an electrical signal throughout their neuron and then transfers itself into a chemical. And these are all over the nervous system. They are all over the person's nervous system. We used to think it was just in the brain, but they're not. They're all over the nervous system everywhere. So what we're actually doing is we're effectively breaking this pattern. Whenever you're doing an NLP technique, what you're doing is basically breaking this pattern. We're going to show, how many people here, has anybody here seen the film What the Bleep Do We Know? A few of you, okay? We're going to have a look at that film again at some point throughout the event and unpack it also from an NLP point of view as well. Because what's actually happening is whenever you break someone's pattern, whenever you change what they're perceiving, these neurons inside actually turn away from each other like that and they cease to have a connection anymore. Because these neurons here, these neurons are all over the nervous system. They carry the messages all around the nervous system. And this problem is like a superhighway, as in the person's been doing it for so long, it's like an automatic behavior. They instantly do it. So that means that we've got to do some things that are pretty unusual, pretty wacky, outside their comfort zone in order to break this pattern. Because if we just do what everybody else does, it's not going to work. I mean, how many times has the person probably sat down with somebody in a seat and talked about their problem and it not gone away? How many times have they probably done that? Hundreds of times. Yeah? So I oftentimes don't sit down. I often, even first thing I do is probably don't sit down very much. I actually stand up a lot of times when I'm doing my work. Again, because then when people sit down, it's like, oh, the problem's not moving. Stand up, problem moves a lot more. They're actually moving. You've got more options when the person's standing up as well. So you can choose to do both. I don't all the time, but various times I have the person standing up. Especially if I'm doing a change technique, for example, I'll often have them stand. There's a question.
Hi. My question is about the what's happening at the new neuron level.
Yes.
When you're doing NLP techniques. You talked about breaking the connections.
Yep.
Are new ones being created? Because the reason why I'm asking the question is because I've been reading about the neural reconditioning process.
Yes.
And that it takes like upwards of 20 days to actually make these new connections. Like when they put the astronauts in zero gravity, it took like over 20 days for them to actually make connections. So I'm trying to understand, if you change something in someone's personal history, what's actually happening at the neural level?
Good.
In light of...
Yep, that's a great question. So what's actually happening is that you're breaking the pattern so they turn away from each other, and then what you're going to do is you're going to create, because it's one thing to break a pattern, but then you've got to put something new in. So once you've broken a pattern, you then create a new behavior. Now, we'll look at later on today about the seven steps to doing that, but ultimately when you're creating a new empowering alternative, what you're actually doing is you're recreating new pathways. Now, to begin with, they're going to be flimsy, like cobwebs, for example. But the more time the person does it, the more repetition, the stronger those cables become. But I'll tell you now, there's one really important key that have you accelerate the process massively. If you want to learn how to do this so that it doesn't take 20 days and it happens like instantaneously, there's one thing you can do to make it work, and here's what it is. You use emotion. If you add emotion to this pot, emotions, and use the person's values of what they really, really want in life, if you have them, live through those values and those emotions whilst you're creating those new patterns. Now, see, when I'm saying creating new patterns, I'm not talking about the person going out in the real world and doing something actually outside. You're going to create these new patterns before they leave your therapy room, for example, before they leave you. Because you can have them do it inside. You have them do it in their mind. You can do it through hypnosis. You can do it through guided technique, guided visualization. You can do it with state rehearsal. You can do it with a strategy installation, all those things. If you keep doing it and you add emotion into the pot, as in the values they really want, it goes much faster, more connections are made. Does that make sense? Which is why, for example, the technique that works so well at FYD is because there's lots and lots of emotion. So to begin with, it's very emotional. To actually break the pattern in the first place, very uncomfortable. And then when we do go out the other side, we've got all the music, my language, and everyone inside, of course, what they're doing is they're creating new empowering internal representations with empowering music, where it's actually, they can feel the music vibrating inside of them, there's tears involved, and emotion. The more emotion that's involved, the stronger the connections, the new connections are made. Does that make sense? Yeah, does that answer your question? Great. So let's move on. I want to, before we move into the presuppositions of NLP, I want to talk about the learning state. Because I think it would be wholly appropriate for you guys to soak all this stuff up unconsciously. So the learning state actually involves you opening the trap door to your unconscious mind. So to do that, what you really need to do is just to go into peripheral vision in order to do that. So just find a spot that you can look at comfortably. And ultimately what you're doing is you want your eyes to kind of, like a little man here, to kind of move up a little bit like this. Yeah. And yeah, tears do tend to form a little when you do that. You can blink, by the way. So just move your eyes slightly up, so you're up and looking up, for example, for now, just to get started, and fixate in a spot, and then begin to expand your awareness out to the sides, out to the periphery, right the way out to the sides. So you can begin to notice different things. You can begin to notice screens, set, stage. You can begin to notice the curtains. Again, all the while you keep looking at the spot, but your awareness starts to wrap around behind you. You can notice the people next to you, maybe even their breathing. And also, you can begin to notice much more movement as well when you're in peripheral vision. Now, the coaches are on the outside to assist you. You begin to notice their movement and notice how that makes you, your state change a little bit as you go more and more inside. See if you can wrap your awareness all the way around behind you. Now, I'm not suggesting you'll be able to see behind you. You can at least imagine behind you. Some people like to imagine a tennis ball behind the back of their head, just hovering a few inches behind, and put your attention there. That's it. And just allow that experience to enter your nervous system. Noticing that your breathing has changed and you're much more open to ideas, suggestions, about to soak all this stuff in. Now again, in your own time, you can then begin to lower your vision down somewhat, either onto the screens or to me on stage. And whilst you do that, stay in peripheral vision the whole time, leaving the trap door open, so you can soak all of this stuff in unconsciously. There you go. Very nice. Thank you. Very nice. Excellent. Good. So, let's have a very, very quick look at the presuppositions of NLP. Very, very quickly. These are effectively the beliefs behind NLP. So just looking on the first page, can somebody share with me what one of your favorite ones are from the first page, and also why it's your favorite? So just pick one from there and say how that's important and why it's important.
One of my favorites is that all intention has a positive, or sorry, all behavior has a positive intention.
Yes.
That one of the reasons that's one of my personal favorites is that when I use that with a client, I can really see a physiological change in them, that they start to believe that even though they're doing something wrong, that they're trying to gain a benefit from them, mm-hmm. from it, from the action, from their behavior.
Yes.
And when I self-apply, I realize that everything I do is for my personal gain.
Yes.
Including being here.
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely everything, whether it's good behavior or bad behavior, has a positive intentional gain.
That's right. Yeah. And all we're really saying effectively is that when somebody has a challenge, all we're really saying is that the choice they have made about the behavior they're using in order to get their needs met may be a limiting decision, as in a limiting choice. And all we're looking to do effectively is enrich their model of world, give them more choice, so they're in a different situation, in another situation in the future, they will be able to choose to do something differently. Because it's all about choice. But the more limited your model of world is, the more limited choice you have, therefore the most limited life you have. So again, looking to expand their model of world. Very nice. Excellent. So somebody else. Another favorite from the first page, and then we'll turn and have a look at the second page.
My favorite is the bottom one on this page. Everyone is doing the best they can with the resources they have available at that time.
Yes.
And I think this is very powerful because so often if people are doing something which isn't in their best interests, they can often feel guilty about that or feel it's their, they're just not getting into feeling that they can move from that. Mm-hmm. Whereas this states very clearly that they were doing the very best at that point, and there are other resources that they have within them that they can access to move forward into the future in a much more resourceful way.
Yes, and you can see how it ties in with the previous presupposition as well, in that it's the best choice to have available in that moment, and they do have more choices if they were to be able to move their state, because it's only their state that has them make that limited choice. Make sense? Very nice. Okay, good. Let's turn the page and have a look at the next set. Somebody else on this set here, have a quick scan through there. What's one that immediately jumps out the page? Tricia, for me, please. There's a microphone coming.
Hi, Trish from Team 3. The one that I love is there's no failure, only feedback.
Uh-huh.
I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Because we all make mistakes as we go along, and rather than, as I've been telling them at work, rather than sitting there beating themselves up, learn from it.
Yep.
Sort of like, because you can never go back and do anything, put right anything you've ever done. But if you learn from the experience, fantastic.
Yeah. And I think, actually, was that a recent quote I heard from Richard Branson that said something on the lines of, I've learned more from my failures than I did from any of my successes. I think I saw that, somewhere like that. And that's very true. You do tend to learn more from the failings. But again, if you don't have that mindset that you see it as feedback rather than failure, then clearly you probably won't ever get the learning, and you'll have to have that failure again in the future at some point to get the learning. Very good. Okay, somebody else. Another one from that particular page. Chris, please.
There are no unresourceful people, only unresourceful states.
Yes, that's nice. And that's how is that important to you? For what purpose did you tell me that? What was that? Why would you pick that one out as being important to you?
Because if I'm not getting the result that I'm looking for, if I change the state I'm in to a more resourceful state, that opens up more possibilities.
Absolutely. So, I've got a direct experience of that myself personally. Just recently, I've been very out of sorts recently. Very out of sorts for me. For the last 4 or 5 days, I've been quite fearful. I've been snappy. I've not been myself, as it were. And it was all down to state, really. And obviously your state is affected by a number of different things. Obviously it's the internal representation you make, and it's also your physiology as well, right? Now if you take your physiology as one example, then obviously physiology has different parts to it as well. So you've got breathing, you've got movement, and you've also got biochemistry as well. And biochemistry is obviously down to, again, things you're ingesting, things you're putting inside your body and stuff. Now, I've been eating really rubbish food for about 5 or 6 days. For me, not good food at all, because I've been on the move a lot, haven't been home very much, haven't been eating very nutritious meals, been eating stuff on the go, stuff that I wouldn't normally allow myself to eat. And I'll tell you, I was stuck, I mean, like, for days, and it's very unusual for me, been very tearful, very fearful, sorts of things. And then I got back home and I juiced. So I got home and had my juice, big, like, juice, and I had a drunk juice. And literally within 15 minutes, my problem had gone away. Within 15 minutes, my state changed. I accessed the resources that I couldn't get access to, and suddenly I was okay again. I just phoned my crew. I said, my team at work, I said, I'm back. I said, just let you know, I'm back. And they were like, yay! I said, how come? I said, oh, it's just, you know, I've been eating rubbish food and stuff like that. And I went, oh yeah, we've been doing the same. And everybody in the office has been struggling for the last 5 days because we've all been intensely working hard but forgetting to feed the body here. So again, I didn't need to, I thought, I was like, is it this? I'm thinking problems, trying to solve it. It was as simple as just changing my state by changing my biochemistry. So remember, that's important. Because one of the things you also want to be including, definitely, and we don't cover this in NLP, but definitely one of the things you want to be including, if you want to give a holistic result, is what this person feeding themselves. Part of the problem can just be the fact that they're not getting any nutrients into their body, which means their brain can't function, their whole body can't function very well, not drinking enough water, and not getting enough good fruits and vegetables and fiber into the system to keep feeding processed food in there. I mean, lots of studies have been done recently, haven't they, with kids, with their diet and stuff, obviously, to see the results. So yeah, definitely. So I like that one, very good, works for me. Let's have a look at, very quickly again, because we have covered this before, but again, briefly, the prime directives of the unconscious mind. Prime directives of the unconscious mind. So again, in the same way, somebody please share one of your ones that you like that stick out from the prime directives of the unconscious mind. What ones stick out for you as being important on the first page there?
It's the fact that everything we do is governed by our subconscious mind.
Yes.
And to affect any change, you have to actually work on the subconscious mind with affirmations and visualizations and stuff like that.
Correct. So if it's a servant, who's it a servant to?
I mean, you split the mind up into the conscious and subconscious. So you have to give the instructions and directions, which start from the conscious mind.
Correct. So the unconscious mind wants to serve the conscious mind. The conscious mind just gives the orders. That's the conscious mind that you're thinking with that says, in this moment, I want to do X, Y, and Z. The unconscious mind just goes ahead and goes and works on that for you. Like the captain of a ship, for example, and the crew. It just goes ahead and does the work for you. As long as it's given clear instructions. And again, from the same point of view, negation also works. So if you keep telling it what not to do, it will do that. It follows the orders like a faithful servant. It's a bit like the sorcerer's apprentice, you know. Suddenly you start doing all these magic spells and stuff with the conscious mind, and then, you know, the powers of water keep coming in, for example, because that's what you keep focusing on, and suddenly, you know, you have to find a way of changing it. Does that make sense? Yeah, very nice, very nice, very good. So anybody else on the first page, what else sticks out for you? Yes, Rosemary.
It's that the unconscious mind preserves the body.
The unconscious mind preserves the body, okay.
Well, and I find that reassuring, because just let it get on with it and it looks after you.
Yes, it does.
It works for me.
Yep. Now, I mean, that's true, and bear in mind that whilst the unconscious mind does preserve the body, it can do that in a number of ways that might not ultimately be useful for the body and the person entirely. Because it's preserving the body. So let me give an example of that. So if you have a blister, for example, or you have a cyst that you have on your skin, that's the, as you know, that's the unconscious mind preserving the body, isn't it? It's therefore it's putting all of the poison into one place. Does that make sense? But it does the same thing with, like, your thoughts, for example, which has people become more fragmented. So from a parts point of view as well, the unconscious mind may preserve the body by putting all of this negative behavior in one little part over here, which preserves the body but doesn't create wholeness. Does that make sense? So I just wanted to say that in terms of, because the other thing, of course, is there's so much the unconscious mind can do. You know, if you keep, it will keep working, preserving the body, but if you keep feeding it stuff that's not useful for it, as in negative thoughts, foods that aren't useful, etc., eventually it's going to run out of its capacity to serve you at some point. And then what it has to do, it has to create, to preserve the body, it has to create a huge, great illness or something like that to have you pay attention, so that to therefore, in the longer term, stop what you're doing upstream, for example. Does that make sense? Yeah, good, excellent. So turning the page then, on the second page, what do you notice there from the prime directives that sticks out for you that you think is particularly useful or something that is something that stands out for you? And as you find it, please raise your hand and let us know. Yes, Hazel, right at the front.
Okay, number 11, controls and maintains all perceptions, i.e. Keeps you on track for what your goals and outcomes are, mm-hmm. whether they're resourceful or not.
Yes. So how is that useful, do you think, in your life specifically? For what purpose did you find that useful to mention yourself?
I think because it's been brought to my attention over the last two or three years, it's been quite extraordinary how many of my outcomes have become reality mm-hmm. On a regular basis. And noticing when I put it out to the universe, I see what I need to see.
Yes. Now, I've just suddenly had this thought, and I'm keen to pursue it with you briefly. I've just had this thought about how does the idea of your unconscious mind controlling and maintaining all your perceptions, and i.e. your deletions, distortions, and generalizations, how does that work with you being an artist? As in, when you're viewing somebody, for example, therefore, you're painting, therefore, your perception, since we know there is no real outside, you're painting a perception, your own perception. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a bit about that and how that relates? Because I think that might be true, might be somehow why this is has come up for you as being important.
Well, it's a known fact for artists when they actually paint, particularly portraits, is it's often about 50% of the artist actually ends up on the canvas. You paint the person and you perceive. What happens is you actually, in a way, bring out the character that is, if you like, similar to your own. I'm a very upbeat person, and most of my paintings end up tending to be about seeing the higher self on the canvas and seeing so that they actually see their higher self. But it's if you like, 50-50. We work together as a team to create a portrait, which is actually they can relate to because they see themselves when they are on true form. And interestingly enough, when I'm painting them, I'm on true form. So, you know, it's a win-win situation.
Oh, that's nice. And I like the way you use the word true form. That's nice, as in you're painting true form.
True.
Yeah, that's nice. And have you ever painted yourself?
Very occasionally.
What happens when you do that?
I need to do one soon, actually, because I haven't done one for about 5 or 6 years. And interestingly enough, when I did do it 5 or 6 years ago, before I really got into all of personal development, I changed quite a few things on my face.
What does that mean?
Meaning that maybe in the past there were areas in my life that I wanted to change. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I think if I did a self-portrait, it would be true form.
Oh, that's nice. Give a hand for that. It's really nice, very nice. Okay.